people can really be a make or break factor in the energy transition. You know, we have the technology to decarbonize already today. The biggest obstacle right now is the fact that there's not enough political will to go further and faster.
We are back with a new episode of Sano Fufu, Hugh Institute's podcast. I'm your host, Felix Jung, and today's episode will be in English because we have an international guest today with us, which is Annika Nicolaas-Ponder, who is Dutch and the team leader of sustainability and innovation at Kiem, based here in Berlin. Kiem's project that we're going to be talking about is Energiewende OMAD, a former project participant at Gesellschaft der Ideen. Similar to the well-known German Wahl-O-Mat, which helps to get an overview of the positions of political parties in Germany, Energiewende OMAD connects its users with an energy transition project that matches their interest. How that works exactly and many more other insights will be brought to us by Annika herself. Thanks a lot for being here.
Hi, Felix. Thanks for having me.
As you might have heard in our previous podcast episodes, my first question usually goes something like this. If your business were a stage show, what would that show be called and what role would you play?
Ooh, I like that. So we are in the business, the nonprofit business of fighting climate change and fostering the energy transition. And these are pretty like big themes. I don't know if anyone saw the news last week where like the Gulf of Mexico, the ocean was literally on fire because of an oil spill combined with a gas leak, like a perfect storm. So this topic, I think, would require something dramatic. Showbiz is great for that. So, you know, it's like a bit of the good versus evil story. So maybe something really dramatic, something like the rise and fall of planet Earth or humanity's last stand, the climate saga or something. But this is maybe a little bit too dark for for a stage show. I'm not sure how many people are going to want to see a very depressing opera about, you know, humanity and how we're shooting ourselves in the foot. So it could also be something more happy, like a musical, maybe like the rise of renewables, a musical journey to save the planet. I think actually song is probably a very important thing to add to the story of climate change. It gives it a little bit more emotional complexity. I actually really like the idea of some kind of climate change musical.
And what would your role be in that show?
Ooh, well, I am a very big karaoke fan, so whatever lets me sing, I would be up for.
Okay. Are those kind of like apocalyptic scenes something that inspired you and your colleagues at Ekem to start Energiewende OMAD in the first place?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, ultimately, I mean, this is a really big story and it feels really overwhelming, you know, when you see the ocean on fire or, you know, like droughts and floods. That is very apocalyptic and it feels like there's not very much you can do about something that big. But if we zoom out, actually, people still have a really big role to play in the solution to this giant issue that we're facing. And one of the things that we need to think about more as researchers, as renewable energy project developers, is how to tell this story in a more easily accessible way that's more engaging, and also how to facilitate participation so that people can access it as easily as if they would, you know, call an Uber or order food or, you know, order something online. This should be just as easy, if not easier. And that there's the big added value that while doing any of these kinds of things related to the energy transition is also good for you and good for the planet. So, you know, why not make it better and easier and more accessible?
Could you elaborate a little bit on what kind of other projects Ekem is working at the moment, besides Energiewende OMAD?
Yeah, sure. So Ekem is the Institute for Climate Protection, Energy and Mobility. We're mainly based in Berlin. And our work centers on accelerating and achieving the global energy transition and to reach our climate targets on time. So in that mission statement, there's two hints at the urgency of the matter: to accelerate and on time. And this is because renewable energy and a low carbon society is the future. It's clear from the decreasing costs of renewables and the increasing awareness, Fridays for Future, etc., that that's the way we're going to go. But at the pace we're going right now, we're not going to achieve this low carbon future early enough to keep global temperatures below 2 degrees, let alone 1.5 degrees. We're just going way too slow. And it would just be such a waste if we do end up living in this decarbonized society in 2070, but it that point, global warming has already progressed to like 4 degrees above where we are right now. The cost of that social, financial, environmental, humanitarian would be insurmountable and unnecessary. So what we are trying to make happen is that we decarbonize, that we reach this sustainable future quicker. And because climate touches upon all facets of society, ICAM works in an interdisciplinary way. We have expertise that falls into different disciplines like mobility or climate finance, energy efficiency, energy law, and then my team, sustainability and innovation. And we basically see what the biggest obstacles are towards further decarbonization, towards more renewable energies, towards more also like social justice related with this transition, and provide solutions, whether they are legal or socioeconomic, mainly to policymakers, but also to companies to together get everything back on track so we reach our targets on time.
Yeah, such an important topic. One of the first things that I think about when it comes to the climate crisis and all its implications is the sense that you already mentioned, kind of this being overwhelmed. And also because it's such a complex, gigantic problem. And some of the things you already touched on is kind of like this triangle of what can the state do to kind of make things better and stop climate change? What can large corporations do? But also what can we as kind of citizens and people do in order to make things better? And what I wondered is, those three things obviously work very differently, and what are the complications in fitting all those three agents together in your work, and what are the obstacles that you're facing while doing that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, ultimately, these are the three big actors that we need to consider in this transformation that all need to be on board: government and large companies, corporations and people. And of course, often when we think of like energy infrastructure, we think of these, usually big players. You know, it's a big political project with large energy utilities and big power grids. And therefore, there is this association that this might be a more far away kind of show run by governments and large companies. But ultimately, the energy transition, and especially in Germany, the Energiewende, also signifies a move away from these large centralized structures and infrastructures and towards more decentralized, small, local energy suppliers, whether it's a single household with their own solar panel or an energy co-op owning their own wind farm or their own storage system. So I think ultimately these three things come together really well. I think in the story of the energy transition in Germany, especially, they do, because it began at the very start with the citizen movement, this grassroots awareness that was concerned with the safety of nuclear energy and also with the potential pollution element of fossil fuels and what happens when you burn those fuels. So this is like a grassroots movement that was protesting already these large energy infrastructures, especially in the 70s, especially concerned with nuclear safety. And it really grew in the 80s with, of course, like Chernobyl. And in the late 70s, there was also a nuclear accident in the United States that helped propel this kind of sustainability and safety concern from citizens to become more organized, to get more academia, researchers, intellectual on board, to then finally trickle down into the political consciousness. And that's what ultimately in the early 90s created the incentive for the German government to introduce a feed-in tariff, this guaranteed payment for renewable energy that was at the very, very basis of the world famous Erneuerbare Energiengesetz, the Renewable Energy Act that Germany pioneered in 2000, that really drove down costs of renewable energy technologies by creating a demand and creating economies of scale. So even though, of course, these are companies that are developing these large technologies, you know, it's also citizens who are buying them, using them, getting like better energy tariffs out of them, organizing themselves to demand more change very successfully, I would say, starting the 70s. And ultimately, of course, the government has to be a part of this to set these kinds of incentives, to level the playing fields, to start removing subsidies for, you know, dirty fuels like oil, et cetera, so that renewable energies can compete on the market. And I think these things feed in together, you know, and we could do a lot better if we would be a little bit more ambitious in terms of policymaking. But I think it shows that there is potential for all these three people, companies and governments to play an important role in the decarbonization of our energy system.
And what kind of projects can be found in the Energiewende, OMAD?
Yeah, so exactly the topic of people, that's what the Energiewende, OMAD is about. We know that people can really be a make or break factor in the energy transition. You know, we have the technology to decarbonize already today. The biggest obstacle right now is the fact that there's not enough political will to go further and faster. And part of that is also because maybe we could vote for more ambitious policymakers, because we could perhaps participate more in the energy transition or be more mindful of the certain kinds of choices that we make, whether it's traveling or consuming certain kinds of products that are polluting. What we wanted to do with the Energiewendomat is make it easier for people to have access to cool success stories in the energy transition, but also to actively participate in these kinds of projects. Today, a lot of renewable energy projects are pioneered by citizens. 40% of renewable energy in Germany is in the hands of citizens even. And this is a market that just citizen energy alone represents in Germany 2 billion euros. That's very, very big. What's also, I think, very interesting is if you're kind of concerned about the climate, but maybe not super passionate about it, is that these projects also offer an interesting return on investments. I mean, if you put your money in the bank, you don't really get very much interest anymore these days, but these projects grow really rapidly and can give you a nicer payoff, so to say. So I think there's a lot of incentives here for people to participate in these projects more actively, but they just don't quite know where to find this information, where to go, you know, what kind of project is right for them. Are they interested in solar in cities or more wind farms on the countryside? So what we wanted to do in the Energiewendomat is create a very holistic overview of all of the participatory projects that are happening in Germany and kind of create a one-stop shop that lets the users kind of give input on their preferences, on their budget, or maybe they don't even want to financially participate. Maybe they want to socially participate, like spend some time in an energy co-op or an urban garden. The Energiewendomat will take these preferences and then navigate the user, just like the Valomat, towards a set of options of participation so that they can choose where they want to participate. Ultimately, the benefits of this kind of participation, first, it's social, of course, because people can connect with other people who are like-minded, who want to do something good for the environment or maybe interesting for their wallets. So it's a little bit of community building. It's also environmentally very beneficial, of course, because these kinds of renewable energy projects replace conventional energy that usually has some form of pollution, whether it's nuclear waste, of course, the classic carbon emissions from coal. And it has a financial benefit in the case that citizens choose to financially invest in a project and get a little bit of a return on investment that you wouldn't have gotten at a bank. And last but not least, for renewable energy projects, of course, it's also good to get a more diversified kind of financing, not just through banks, but also with and for citizens.
And how can I, if I have a project that might be suitable for the Energiewendomat, submit it there? And how are the projects curated?
So we work together, ICEM, with a consortium, so with a project partnership, because this is a fairly large project. There's a lot of things happening in Germany, and creating that overview and that database, can just Google it. So we were very lucky that we have a great partnership with the most relevant citizen energy organizations in Germany. That includes Bundesbürger Energie, 100% Erneuerbar, and the innovative company UECO, to create a first basic sort of like overview and database of the projects that right now exist in Germany. So that's the first step. Then when the Energiewendomat goes online, that will be next year, we will also open it for inputs by users, for users. So if, you know, it's possible that there's a community somewhere in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern that's also starting their own maybe green hydrogen storage units or solar farm, they can then enter their own project into the Energiewendomat. We have moderators to check if the project, you know, is legitimate and exists. Da, da, da. And ultimately, this is the idea to get this really kind of grassroots, bottom-up driven overview of participation options in the energy transition. So anyone who has a project where they want more social or financial participation from their community or just from anyone in Germany who's interested in contributing, they can add their project to the Energiewendomat.
As U Institute, our expertise lies in the cultural and creative industries mostly, which obviously have a lot of intersections with social innovation as well. And one of the key struggles or decision-making processes for the entrepreneurs that we work with is this kind of balancing act of being a business person on one hand and having an activist mission at the same time. And I imagine that must be something to consider as well in everything that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree. It is a bit of a struggle, especially because, you know, we're first and foremost also a nonprofit research institute. And the topics that we're working on are incredibly relevant. I mean, I think that there should be much more money in topics like social justice, climate change, gender equality, etc. But these are not the topics that make money, you know? And of course, because we're a nonprofit, a lot of our funding actually comes from governmental tenders, call for proposals. So publicly funded projects is kind of like our bread and butter. That's where we make most of our money. We also don't have like one major donor or some kind of Grundfinanzierung, like some basic financing that we get from some ministry. That means that we're also completely independent. And it also means that we're always on the lookout for more financing and more projects and more acquisition and project proposal writing. That is always a challenging line to balance, I think, especially in my team, because we work sustainability and innovation on those topics in the energy transition that are not entirely mainstream yet, I would say. For instance, just transitioning coal regions, making sure that the transition there happens in a socially just way, gender equality in the energy transition and in climate protection. This kind of intersectionality is something that people are generally aware of, that it exists, but it's not something that governments have yet completely integrated in their policymaking, let alone in funding and calls for proposals. So it's ultimately, even though it's nonprofit, a very financially competitive field, I would say. So it's very important that you don't get caught in some kind of mission drift where you forget, you know, we're doing this for like the public good. We have to keep our eyes on the road and make sure that we don't chase consultancy jobs, but stick to these like big kind of like public interest oriented research projects. And I think we're doing a very good job at that. But like you said, it's definitely challenging, you know. What we also want to do is go and demonstrate with Fridays for Future whenever there is a demo happening in Berlin. But of course, you know, we also need to make sure that our projects are running and that our work is done. So unfortunately, there's a little bit of a trade-off there where we cannot always be as like loud and vocal and out there as we would like, just because ultimately we are still also an organization that needs to pay the rent at the end of the month.
So Energiewende OMAD used to be a project participant at Gesellschaft.de. What's the best thing that you've learned during the coaching process at Gesellschaft.de?
I think what was really interesting is to get in touch with the other participants and to see what they're doing and what their struggles are and to find some common ground there and then get these common coaching sessions that that address these kinds of issues, whether it's finding partners or financing. I thought it was a really cool idea to have not like, you know, we call it an Ausschreibung or a call for proposals, but a call for ideas. It keeps it a lot more flexible and agile and young to participate. And I think that was also reflected in the selection of ideas that were ultimately presented in this contest. It was also for me very cool to see what social innovations are in different disciplines, because for me, of course, I come at it from the climate and energy transition perspective, where social innovation is basically any kind of improvement on social needs or structures through the decentralization of our energy supply, the expansion of renewables and sustainability in general. But of course, that's just one take on social innovations. And there's a lot of areas in our society, whether it's, like healthcare or youth mobilization, where social innovations are really relevant. So I learned a lot about those other areas as well. I enjoyed it.
And you are no longer a part of the project participants of Gesellschaft der Ideen because I heard you decided to go another route with another business accelerator program, if I'm correct.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We were very lucky. We have been selected for funding by, it's pending final approval, but it's looking very good. We've been selected for funding by the BMBE to develop this Energiewendomat and also tag on some research associated with all of that cool data and participation knowledge that we're going to gather. And that's, yeah, to do that, the kind of research that we would like to do, but also especially the development of the Energiewendomat. For one thing, the creation of an online platform like this, you need, of course, people who can program, who can code, who can maintain it. You need staff to moderate it, to make sure that the new entries from users are also compatible with what we're actually trying to achieve. You need lawyers, Datenschutz, data protection is a giant thing. I'm not a lawyer myself, so I was like, come on, how hard can it be? It's just this tiny issue. But like these things are just ultimately much more complex with a lot more potential, for legal liability than anyone should be comfortable with without a lawyer. So ultimately, for a big interdisciplinary project like that, to be successful and to also really reach the audience that we want to reach, which is pretty much anybody who's mildly interested in participating in or benefiting from the energy transition, you need to do it right. You need to be thorough. And for that, you need money.
So with the new project funding at BMWi, what are kind of like the near future goals that are ahead of you that you're and Energiewendomat is trying to achieve in the next couple of months or years?
We had to map the whole thing out in great detail with like a project plan and everything. So we have 3 years to get the whole thing up and running. The Energiewendomat should go online already end of next year. And then we would be, of course, improving it, marketing it, making sure that people know about it. We'll be doing events and workshops and getting social innovators in the energy transition together to get more ideas on how to accelerate and foster the development of participatory projects in the energy transition. So our milestones are basically getting this online platform, the Energiewendomat, up and running next year, and creating a network for everyone, for all the citizens in the energy transition who are creating participatory projects, who would like to join participatory projects, and ideally make that network last beyond the project lifetime. So we're looking into ways on how to fund a small spin-off after the project is done. Because of course, when you create these kinds of networks and you get that kind of momentum and excitement and awareness of the product in a given domain, but also of the knowledge network of citizens working together to decarbonize the energy system, it cannot end after 3 years. It has to keep on going. It has to keep on growing. And I think with our consortium, we're in a very good shape to make that happen because these are all the energy transition innovators already. So
tying up this episode of our podcast, I'm going to go back to the very first thing you mentioned today, which is the massive, horrible fire hole in the ocean and whether or not the energy transition as a whole on this planet that we're living on. Are we on the right path to get to a climate neutral or a decent, sustainable future? And are you optimistic or pessimistic that we're going to get there?
I think we're on the right path. We're definitely going in the right direction. But like I said in the beginning, we're going too slowly. We're like walking down this road, but it should be a high-speed train, you know? So that's, we're going in the right direction, but we need to go faster. And there is also the risk of populism that is just so incredibly depressing that this is some kind of weird history repeating thing, that this is not something of the past. But that is also something that could slow this train down even more. You know, if we're looking at policy making in Brazil, for instance, right now, that used to be quite forward looking when it came to renewable energy, that can really slow things down significantly. The protection of rainforests is completely being neglected and of indigenous populations. Of course, it's the opposite of where we need to go. But I feel like ultimately, and this is kind of sad but true, but the market will also help dictate the right path. Fossil fuels are just less and less marketable. They're expensive. Even if you don't even count the emissions, the externalities, the public health costs into the equation, renewable energies are becoming so competitive and cheap and easy to install. You know, nuclear power plants can take like 20 years to build. It's crazy amounts of time. This is just a much more agile and cheap solution. So I think that will help us stay on the right track and hopefully also go faster. Technological breakthroughs can play a really big role in this equation. What I think is important to remember is that even though this all feels really big, we people, we have a really big role to play in this energy transition and in the fight against climate change, whether it is through our consumption choices or through the people that we vote for. The more that we vote for climate friendly or even just like really bold policymaking in favor of energy transition, the more the political spectrum will shift towards that need from the voters. So I think that's really important to remember that we're not voiceless, quite the opposite. We also have a bit of an obligation to try to convince our friends and family to think similarly. And I know that that can be challenging. You know, at the Christmas table, there's always someone there who thinks that, it's not that bad and whatever, it was really cold today. So climate change is not that bad. To engage in conversation and try to convince people around us. And that's not to say that people are the end-all solution to this. You know, governments play a really big role too. Ultimately, when we look at like 70% of global emissions coming from 100 corporations only, clearly there is a gap in the regulating of these companies that needs to be addressed by governments. And we have a say in those governments to a very large extent, especially in, you know, democracies. So hopefully we can make an impact with our choices and with our votes.
Yes, absolutely. Very inspirational words. Thank you. And so right now we're already at the end of our podcast. Annika, thank you very much for being here, for giving us your insight into all things climate crisis and sustainability. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thanks. You're welcome. It was fun.
And for everyone who's listening, we're going to hear each other again in the next episode at Salon Foufou.